Today's Teisho will be on case 37 in the Book of Serenity. The case 37 is entitled Guishan, Active Consciousness. Introduction: driving away the plowman's ox, pulling its nose around, taking away the hungry man's food, holding his throat tight. Is there anyone who can administer the poison? Guishan asked Yangshan, if someone suddenly said, all sentient beings have active consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental to rely on, how would you prove it in experience? Yangshan said, if a monk comes, I call him, hey you. If the monk turns his head, I say, what is it? If he hesitates, I say, not only is their active consciousness boundless and unclear, but they have no fundamental to rely on. Guishan said, good. Verse, one call and he turns his head. Do you know the self or not? Vaguely, like the moon through ivy, a crescent at that. The child of riches, as soon as he falls on the boundless road of destitution, has such sorrow. So it's so wonderful to be practicing with everybody here. We sat together this morning. People were really sitting deeply, and it's a beautiful day. You know, this is like perfect circumstances for deep practice. You know, this koan starts out with sort of a disturbing introduction. Driving away the plowman's ox, pulling its nose around, taking away the hungry man's food, holding his throat tight. Is there anyone who can administer the poison? That sounds pretty uninviting. We spend a lot of our time being crude spirited. My second teacher, Webb Roshi, has spent a lot of time in China, and he said that there was a temple he went to, and often in China, Buddhist temples will have some kind of a statement somewhere in the temple, maybe over the Buddha hall or over the meditation hall. And the characters basically said, deep chan makes people not crude spirited. That was what it said. Deep chan makes people not crude spirited. You know, ordinarily in our everyday lives, we are crude spirited, you know. And our mental activities make us crude-spirited. So, you know, we have a lot of information coming at us. And, you know, so much information. And I myself spend a lot of time on the internet. You know, I do a lot of my work on a computer. My students send me papers, and I grade their papers online. And I write using a Word program, you know. And so I might be writing something, and then I'll go to Google, and I'll Google something that I'm writing, and a text will pop up, and I'll read what somebody has said about this, And then, you know, I'll get a cup of tea and I'll come back and I'll keep working. And then I'll get tired and I'll think, okay, well, what's going on with the news? You know, and then I'll go to NewYorkTimes.com and I'll read the New York Times, and I'll say, you know, I wonder what Ceylon is, what's going on Ceylon. So I'll go to Ceylon. And, you know, usually when I go to Ceylon or when I go to the New York Times, there'll be something that's sort of initially engaging, and then I'll feel like some emotion. Maybe it will be something about, you know, what's going on with Iran, and I'll feel anxiety, I'll feel anger. You know, why are we picking a fight? You know, Iran's not a great place to live, I know, but why are we picking a fight right now? You know, this could get, you know, so all these different emotions. Then I go back to work, and then a little later back, you know, grazing, and this is like a junk food diet, right? A lot of this is like junk food. Not everything that I'm eating during the day online with my mind is junk food, but a lot of it's just junk food, right? And you have to give a presentation, and give the presentation, and then afterwards you're worried about whether you did it the right way, or maybe you're on your way to the presentation and you realize, you know, that this has certainly happened to me. I'll have to give a talk and I'll suddenly realize that my, you know, there's a big wrinkle in my shirt, you know, or something, or my shirt, the iron wasn't working properly and the right side of my shirt is all wrinkled. I ironed it, but maybe it didn't heat up or something, and I'm going to go into this meeting and people are going to see wrinkles on my shirt. I want everybody to think I'm together, like I have my act together, as we used to say. And so I'll come into the meeting thinking, well, I hope nobody sees the wrinkles on my shirt. And then, you know, maybe you have to give a talk and you're worried about what people are going to think. Or maybe you have people over to your house for some event and the food doesn't turn out the way you want it, and you know lie there at night thinking, oh, why didn't I follow the recipe? So we spend a lot of time eating, consuming with our minds what you could call junk food, right? You know, junk food is food that's very highly processed, you know. So I was just reading in Ceylon, as a matter of fact, that you know, the more you process food, the more sugar is in it. And it was saying they had some examples. If you get a tomato at the store and you chop it up and you make some kind of a tomato sauce out of it, there's very little sugar in that. There's just the natural sugar. If you go to the next level, if you get, say, canned tomatoes, actually, sometimes if you're not careful, there's sugar added to it. And then if you get tomato sauce, like for spaghetti, there's even more sugar added to it. And then if you have ketchup, you know, ketchup is like, there's a lot of sugar in ketchup, believe it or not. And they went through product after product like this. And as you get more and more, as the contents of your, as the food gets more and more refined, there's more and more additives, right? And they said, you know, if you want to eat healthily, you should get as close to you can to the original item, right? So here at Sesshin, we're actually doing that, right? We have broccoli, but you know, we cut the broccoli ourselves. We have eggplant for lunch. We cut the eggplant ourselves. No sugar has been added to anything, you know. So, quite, you know, relatively speaking, quite healthy. But in our mental world, you know, we eat a lot of junk food, highly refined information, right? You know, if you go to a movie, I went to a movie about a week ago, and after the movie, we all got together, we discussed the fine points of the movie, and you know, there's nothing wrong with reading the newspaper, there's nothing wrong with listening to the radio, there's nothing wrong, but our information sources are pretty highly processed information sources. They come to us with a lot of processing, right? When you turn on NPR, if you listen to NPR, you know, you always hear the same thing, right? It's always the same thing, you know. So, and here this morning, and you can almost say, and now here's Steve Inskeep, right? Steve Inskeep, and then you pretty much know. You don't know who maybe they're going to interview today, but it's always the same thing, right? And you can listen sort of casually. It's like eating popcorn at a movie. You don't even taste the popcorn, right? So, you know, we are in a society where information is just flowing all the time. And it has very little nutritional value, right? We're just sweeping in all this information. People, when I walk into my classroom, my students are all on the phone sending themselves like really highly processed information. You know, hi, how are you? You know, R is a letter R, you know, or something like R, you is a U, right? So everything's highly stereotyped, highly predictable, and it's sort of like junk food. There's very little content, and there's almost no depth to any of this information, right? There's just, you get little emotional tweaks, right? So, you know, you read about Iran, you might feel a little nervous, you know, you might, but it's a low content information, and it doesn't matter much, right? when you live in that world, you know, your relationship to everything around you becomes relatively shallow, So you know, it's a little bit like one of my favorite a Zen master I respect very much was named Shuyun, Empty Cloud. Shuyun died in, I believe, 1958, but he was born in the 1840s, believe it or not. He lived to be more than 100 years old. And he was undoubtedly the greatest Zen master of the last 300 years. Shuyun used to tell a story about Puyi. Puyi was the last emperor of China. And he said, Puyi would get up in the morning, and he'd go and have breakfast. And he was the emperor of China, so when he would come in, there would be this huge table spread just for him. So, you know, cooks would work starting in the early hours of the morning to prepare items for him. And he would just walk down the table and pull the cover off of a food item and look and smell it, and maybe he doesn't want to eat it, and maybe he does, you know. And then he'd go to the next item. And, you know, the people who were working in the imperial kitchen felt they had to provide a variety of foods that he might or might not be interested in. They had to make sure that something might tempt his appetite. And it all had to be excellent, right? Maybe he just doesn't feel like eating. So he'd say, well, thanks, guys, but I don't feel like, he wouldn't say thank you. He's the emperor of China. He'd just say, no, nothing for me today. And they'd bow and take all the food out, right? Well, you know, we're sort of like the emperor of China. You know, we live in an information age that does that too, right? Things are just supposed to catch our attention. It's flowing by all the time. Anyway, Puyi, at one point, there was a rebellion. And he had to flee at one point. And he left the Forbidden City with some of his guards and some of his trusted advisors in disguise. And at one point, he was actually living with like peasants. And Shuyun said basically that you know. when he was living with peasants, he was had nothing to eat for days, right? He had to flee. He was living with these peasants, and they made dinner, and their dinner was sweet potato greens. And you know, basically, if you take a, people do this sometimes, they'll take a sweet potato and they'll put, it's actually quite beautiful if you want to do it. You can buy a sweet potato. If you have a jar, a glass jar, you can put toothpicks in the sweet potato, and you put the bottom of the sweet potato in the water, and the roots will come out of the sweet potato and go into the jar, and then it will send out all these tendrils, right? You know, these green, beautiful green tendrils. At one time in China, this was a common food for animals. You know, the sweet potato vines, right? But poor people in China before the revolution used to eat these themselves, right? So this was like a very poor person's food, right? Something that if you didn't have anything fancy, you know, it would be like sweet potato vines tonight for dinner. And so the emperor of China hadn't had anything to eat for days and days. He was famished. And he was staying with these peasants, and they gave him a sweet potato vine. And when he ate the sweet potato vine, it was delicious, of course, right? And before, he had been going to breakfast or going to lunch and having 20 or 30, who knows how many food items. And, you know, the people had spent who knows how many hours preparing them. And now, you know, he was barely surviving, running for his life. It was probably cold and frightening. And he ate some basically humble food, right? These sweet potato vines. And they were delicious. And by the way, probably more nutritious than what he was eating. And Xu Yun's point is that we're all a little bit like the Emperor of China, right? We're a little bit, we are a little bit over indulged in a certain way. And that, you know, we need to put things back into perspective. We need to, you know, we need to eat lower on the food chain, or lower on the production chain, I guess you could say. So instead of having spaghetti sauce, let's go back to the tomato. So a little bit what we're doing here is a little bit like that, right? We live in a nutritional value poor information society, where stuff just comes into our head and out of our head and into our head and out of our head, and none of it means anything. And it has no depth, and it can't really affect us, except to sort of make us sort of like stuffed all the time, right? Stuffed. And coming to Sesshin is a little bit like, we're becoming a little bit like the Emperor of China. We're going to miss a few meals, right? We're not going to get so much information coming in. And now we're going to get back to things in a more essential and nutritious form, right? And so it's a little bit like somebody, like driving away the plowman's ox, pulling its nose around, taking the hungry man's food and holding his throat tight. You know, you have to go on an information diet. Right? You know, this is like an information diet. Please, if you have a phone, turn it off and don't look at it during Sesshin. You know, please. Whatever you do, don't go back to your room and graze on your phone. You know, that's like eating junk food, right? Let yourself get a little hungry for information. Right? Let yourself be a little bit empty. Not your stomach, but your mind, right? Let your mind be a little bit empty. And, you know, just as if you eat a fine food every day, even the finest food loses its flavor. You know, it's the same thing with information. You know, when you're awash in information and you come to Sesshin, you know, you go on an information diet, right? No inputs. And now, you know, after a couple days of the information diet, you know, things begin to have, they begin to have a very different quality. You know, just hearing the wind blow can be so beautiful, but also it causes every cell of your body to vibrate. You know, you are, we are like this finely tuned instrument, and we forget how finely tuned we are because we live in this information, we live crudely. You know, we're crude spirited. And everything about our culture makes us crude spirited. One of the things that I teach in one of my classes is an article on the food industry. And it's so interesting because, you know, companies like Nabisco and other food production companies actually hire scientists to find, really, these are people who are famous in the world of junk food and food production. And they have found exactly the right combination of sugar and fat and salt to make something irresistible, right? You know, so something, the article talks about the invention of cheese puffs, right? Cheese puffs are sugary, salty, greasy, and they're empty. You know, when you crunch on them, they disappear in your mouth with a little burst of flavor. And you can eat a whole bag and feel that you haven't eaten anything, right? But they're very bad for you, you know. So coming to Sesshin is like we're going on a bit of a diet with our information, and it's very liberating, very purifying. You know, we're going to be spending hours and hours watching our breath and entering deep mushin, deep wushin. And every time you do this, it's profoundly transformative. And, you know, after a week of Sesshin, after 5 days of Sesshin, you will be a different person. You will feel different. Your mind will be less crude spirited, right? You know, when you hear the wind, you know, if you're surfing on your phone, you're surfing the web, or you're texting, or you're tweeting, you know, the wind is just, if you notice it at all, it's just a distraction. You're very cut off from the world. Your senses are like asleep. Your whole consciousness is like it's like asleep. And, you know, when we come to Sesshin, people who don't do Sesshin would say we're going into a trance. You know, people, if you see pictures of meditators, they say are entering a trance. But this is 100% false. It's 100% false. Ordinary modern consciousness is a trance and a dream. And it's a shallow, crude dream. And it's constantly distracting, but there's no depth and it has no nutritional value. And the people who live in that dream are very cut off from themselves and from other people and from the world. And so the real trance is everyday life in the modern world. And what we're doing is detrancing. We're purifying body, mind, and heart with emptiness. And it's like going on a detox diet for the mind, you know. We're detoxifying our minds. And we have all these problems in trying to do that, right? I mean, it's just a fact. You know, we have cravings. So I said, you know, those people at Nabisco have spent millions of dollars to find what they call the sweet spot, right? It's the place where everything you've been conditioned to like, or everything your evolution has made you like, a little sugar, a little sweet, a little fat. You know, they know exactly how to push your buttons. And if you take away somebody's chips, or you take away somebody's dip, you know, if you eat chips and dip every day, when it's taken away from you, it's very difficult to deal with that. You know, it's very painful and difficult. It causes you emotional distress. You know, it's very hard to give something up once it becomes a deeply ingrained habit, even if you know it's bad for you. Right? My father died of cancer. He was a smoker, and he tried so many times to quit smoking. And if you don't smoke, and I've never smoked, if you don't smoke and you see somebody trying to quit smoking, it's funny. It seems funny. Because we're not experiencing that addiction, the craving, right? Craving. If you're inside that experience, it's very painful. Because, you know, smoking isn't just about smoking. It's about so many things. A friend of mine who was a smoker told me that, you know, basically when he would be working, writing his article or something, the cigarette was like, he would have a cigarette and you get some nicotine and it makes you feel energized. But also it makes you feel a little bit free. So smoking isn't just about smoking. It's about getting a nicotine fix, but it's also about feeling free. You know, when my friend was young, all the movie stars used to smoke cigarettes. All the people in the movies would smoke cigarettes, all the heroes, right? If you've ever seen the movie Casablanca, you know, the hero smokes cigarettes throughout the whole thing. And you know, when my friend would smoke a cigarette, he was becoming Humphrey Bogart. You know, he was becoming a cool person. So he'd suddenly smoked a cigarette and it felt like transforming him. So it's so hard to give that up, right? It's so hard to give up the potato chips. It's so hard to give up, you know, whatever. people who have problems with alcohol, right? If you don't have a problem with drinking, it seems so easy. Just stop drinking. But so much is invested in drinking, right? It's not just about drinking. It's your freedom. It's your happiness. It's your calm place or your happy place, right? So you know, a lot of the way we live is addicting and bad for us. And some of what we experience at Sesshin is like withdrawal. In a little bit. You know, please consider yourself an addict in certain ways, right? And even though our way of life is shallow and crude and actually causes us a lot of emotional distress, you know, nevertheless, we're tied to it by all these cravings. You know, cigarette smokers too know it's not good for them, right? They know. They know they're not getting enough oxygen. They're taking in all these toxins. When they try to run, they get out of breath. But when you don't have a cigarette and you need one, it causes you great emotional distress. And some of Sesshin can be like that, right? It's like detoxifying your system isn't all pleasant. There's a feeling of having something taken away from you, right? Something's being taken away from you. And when something's being taken away from you, it feels like a loss for a while. Right. So you know, if you take somebody's cigarettes away from them, and they're a smoker, you know, they feel like they're out of control. They're having these cravings, and it feels like a loss. You know, now I'm going to have to I'm going to have to grade all these papers, and I'm not going to have my break. I'm not going to have that moment where I stop grading papers, and I have a cigarette, and I look out the window, and I feel the rush of the nicotine, and now I'm Humphrey Bogart. I'm a cool guy. I'm not just some guy grading papers. I'm cool. I'm somebody. You know, that's all tied in with smoking. And, you know, I was reading about this writer, Jonathan Franzen. And he actually works on a computer that is not tied into the internet. And he absolutely doesn't have a router. And it doesn't, you know, a system. And so when he goes in to do his work, there's just a computer, a PC, with no external connections. That's for his writing. And I was reading, and he said, I have to do it because I can't resist the power of knowing, well, what's going on in Salon? Or what's going on in New York Times? You know, or what about the food section in the Times? I wonder what's there today. It's too tempting. But when you don't go online, you know, and you just say, I'm just going to write, you know, you stop just being distracted, and suddenly your thinking process becomes so much better. And the same is true, you know, if you stop smoking, you know, your lungs recover, you know. But craving is something we all feel to some degree. And some of the pain or the discomfort people feel at Sesshin is actually the ache we feel when cravings are not being met, not being provided for, and respond, we're not responding to the cravings with what we want, right? And I think this is really interesting. You know, when something is taken away from us that we crave, it feels like a loss for a while. And maybe for a couple days, but then it can begin to feel like something else, like freedom. So what feels like a loss can turn into a feeling of freedom. You know, because it is freedom, actually. Craving is the opposite of freedom. When these food companies were trying to find a new market, they realized that little kids could be a market. And they hired these advertisers to come up with a advertising campaign to appeal to kids. They have a product, and they're a best-selling product. They're called Lunchables. They're wrapped in like four kinds of plastic, so they're destructive to the environment. And inside are some little crackers and some cheese and like some salami or something. And they're totally terrible for little kids, and they're a huge runaway hit. And the advertising commercial said to the kids, it was a commercial made just for the kids, and it plays like on Saturday mornings, like cartoon time. And the commercial says to the kids something like this: all day long you have to do what your parents say, but lunchtime is your time. Now you can have a Lunchable, right? You're free. But of course you're not free, right? And so much of what we, so much of the way we all live is like that, right? So when you come to Sesshin, you know, it's like a big, in a way it can feel like a big loss. You know, there's no phone, there's no information flowing across your mind, you know. You might feel bored. Right? But this feeling of like a loss, something's taken away from me, that's a very important feeling. That's very deep. Because, you know, that means that we're stepping outside of what's familiar, but we're losing control. And, you know, the loss and craving are very closely interrelated. And even though nobody likes to feel that sense of loss, if you stay with the sense of loss, it becomes freedom. It becomes freedom. You know, I love that name, Empty Cloud, right? I mean, all of our lives, we want to be a person. We want to have a well-developed personality. We want people to like us. We want people to respect us. And when they don't, for whatever reason, you know, we feel emotional distress. And that's a kind of addiction too, right? Believe it or not, you can be addicted to the approval of others. That's a kind of craving. You know, so you can find yourself doing things because you want others to approve of you. And when they don't approve of you, you feel distress, right? That's a kind of addiction, believe it or not. That's a kind of addiction too, just like craving a cigarette. Many things we do are addictive behaviors. You know, and Xu Yun was a very deeply awakened person. And, you know, if people don't acknowledge you, if they don't recognize you, if they don't praise you, you know, you can feel emotional distress for a while. But then you realize, you know, there's actually, behind my eyes, there's actually nobody there. There's nobody here to praise. There's actually nobody here to be praised or to be appreciated. And that feels like a loss for a while, and then you realize, oh my gosh, I've been free all along. I've been free all along. I haven't had to worry about any of this crap, right? But, you know, it's hard to get to that place. That's why Sesshin is so precious. You know, we discover in Sesshin a kind of consciousness that is beyond judgment. You know, beyond our judgment or anybody's judgment. You know, it's absolutely awakened mind. You know, the teaching is that at the core of consciousness, under all our cravings, under all our anxieties, under all of our desires to be noticed and liked and approved of, and our fears of not being noticed, liked, and approved of, underneath all this stuff, there's this radiant, enlightened mind. And as we take things away, we take this away, we take this away, we take this away, we take this away, it feels like loss, 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 loss. But actually what's happening is your consciousness is becoming closer and closer to the source consciousness. And everything becomes richer and more alive and you feel more deeply connected. So it's the opposite of what you would think. By each step, each like little loss that Sesshin involves takes you down, down, down through the mind. And as you go through the mind, consciousness becomes more refined and more luminous and more free and more connected. See? All you have to do is hang in there. You know, all you have to do is hang in. But you know, the path, so to speak, is a bit frightening because it does feel like a loss. It does feel, you know, your cravings are not being met. Your mental habits are not being reinforced. But as you're going through this process, which can be a little bit like withdrawal, you know, your consciousness is becoming clearer and purer. Day by day, hour by hour, sit by sit. And you're getting back to this fundamental root consciousness, this luminous mind, which is always present. See, this is the koans, you know, there's a teaching in one of the great sutras. And the Flower Ornament Sutra, and it says, all people have this luminous root consciousness, right, which is Buddha mind. All sentient beings have active consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental to rely on. And how would you prove it? Nyangshan said, if a monk comes, I'll call him and say, hey, you. If he turns his head, I'll say, what is it? And if he doesn't know what it is like a Zen question. If he doesn't know how to answer, that doesn't prove he doesn't have the consciousness, because he does. See, there's a consciousness which is deeper than right and wrong. There's a consciousness which doesn't care if your shirt is wrinkled when you go to the meeting. You know, there's a consciousness that doesn't care if, you get the raise or you don't get the raise. We're a little bit, because of our cravings, it's hard for us to get to that place. But when we begin to take things away, when we begin to sort of detox the mind, we get closer hour by hour, sit by sit. It's like we're going from the top of the outer surface of our brains, right, which are filled with all this chatter, and we're going down through the layers of the mind, you know, down the brain stem, right, to the bottom of to the core of the brain. It's the core of the mind, not the brain. And at the core of the mind, there's this luminous clarity. And when you feel the wind, you feel like your whole body is coming alive. Or when you, by the third day of Sesshin, you know, if your mind is really empty and you've been going down, down, down through the layers of your mind, you know, the rice is just delicious. Just rice is delicious. So, you know, this is day one of Sesshin. You know, Sesshin, if you've never been to Sesshin before, feels a little strange, right? You know, you're away from your friends, you're away from your family. Hopefully no phone, no information coming. It can feel like a loss. But if you just stay with that loss, it becomes the gate, putting things away, letting them go, not satisfying your cravings, you know, is how we purify body, mind, and heart. And it seems like we're taking things away, but eventually everything becomes alive, everything becomes connected. Driving away the plowman's ox, pulling its nose around, taking away the hungry man's food, holding his throat tight. Is there anyone who can administer the poison? But, you know, the poison is what cures you. Weishan asked Yangshan, if somebody suddenly said all sentient beings have active consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental to rely on, in other words, they don't care about anything, how would you prove it in experience? Yangshan said, if a monk comes, I call him, hey you. If the monk turns his head, I say, what is it? If he hesitates, I say, not only is their active consciousness boundless and unclear, but they have no fundamental to rely on. It's always there. Weishan said, good. Verse, one call and he turns his head. Do you know the self or not? One call, you think you're doing it, but really your big mind is doing it. Vaguely, like the moon through ivy, a crescent at that. The child of riches, as soon as he falls on the boundless road of destitution, has such sorrow. Right? But that's just the beginning, just the beginning. On the other side of that, sorrow, something really wonderful.